This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. The definition of pivot from the pages of Merriam-Webster. To adapt or improve by adjusting or modifying something. Or maybe not if you're the Federal Reserve. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, November the 2nd. Good to have you along, everybody. All right, so to be totally honest with you, it was little of this, little of that from Fed Chair Jay Powell today. Yes, the main interest rate that the Fed controls, it's called the federal funds rate, is going up another 0.75 percentage point. We all knew that was coming, and Powell has been pretty clear about why.
We need to bring our policy stance down to a level that's sufficiently restrictive to bring inflation down to our 2% objective over the medium term.
Here, though, is the question.
How will we know that we've reached that level?
Exactly.
So I think you can think about our tightening program as really addressing three questions.
One.
The first of which was and has been how fast to go.
Two.
The second is how high to raise our policy rate.
And then three.
And the third will be eventually how long to remain at a restrictive level.
So here is the answer to number one.
We've moved 3.75% since March, admittedly from a base of zero. It's a historically fast pace, and that's certainly appropriate given the persistence and strength in inflation and the low level from which we started.
And to be clear, Powell said explicitly today he does not think the Fed has raised rates too fast. Okay, the answer to question number two, how high to raise them?
We may ultimately move to higher levels than we thought at the time of the September meeting. That level is very uncertain, though.
Which sounds to me a whole lot like the Federal Reserve equivalent of that shruggy emoji. I don't know. And then question three, how long to keep rates higher and going up?
At some point, it will become appropriate to slow the pace of increases. So that time is coming. And it may come as soon as the next meeting or the one after that. No decision has been made.
Here's the payoff, though. For those who've been waiting for the Fed to back off a little bit, maybe not raise rates quite so much, you're kind of thinking about it wrong.
To be clear, let me say again, the question of when to moderate the pace of increases is now much less important than the question of how high to raise rates and how long to keep monetary policy restrictive, which really will be our principal focus.
So that Fed pivot you had heard so much about, not really the way Powell and the gang are thinking about it. One more meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee this year, December 13, 14. A whole lot of inflation and economic data, we should tell you, is coming between now and then. Wall Street today was not so wild, it turns out, about the Fed chair's message. Details, numbers, y'all know the drill. All All right, so look, Powell talked today, as he usually does, for about 45 minutes after the Fed wrapped up its meeting. So we can't cover everything that he said, but there is something that wasn't talked about. Why has the labor market not yet gotten the memo that this economy really needs to cool down for some inflation to get back to normal? Marketplace's Sabri Benishore is on that one.
Companies are still hiring a lot of workers because their customers, that's us, are still giving them money.
Consumers are still spending.
Mark Hamrick is senior economic analyst for Bankrate.
So the economy is continuing to expand. We've seen that most recently in the GDP rising in the third quarter.
GDP is in the total value of everything produced in the economy. And so, despite whispers of recession and rising interest rates, employers are still hiring.
They're still recovering from the height of the pandemic.
Amber Clayton is with SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management. Workers left some industries like restaurants in droves, for example, and there's been a decline in immigration.
Most of what I hear from employers is that they're struggling to find talent.
And the fact that it has been such a pain to find people means that many employers are still looking.
They're holding on to workers because of, or at least due in part to, the challenges of finding workers. And so essentially it's this concept of labor hoarding.
John Lear is chief economist at Morning Consult. All that said, there are signs the labor winds are changing.
Increasingly, it's the case that lower income adults are saying that they ran out of their savings and that prompted them to re-enter the labor force.
He says more workers are taking on second jobs, too. So if more workers are coming into the labor market, that could cool things down. Erica Groshen is a senior economic advisor at Cornell and former commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. She says the current pace of hiring can't go on indefinitely.
The working age population is just not increasing at that level.
So at some point, she says, something's got to give. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
As lousy as all the supply chain miseries have been for consumers, they have been very, very good for the global shipping industry. Now, though, one of the biggest shippers says the good times are coming to an end. The Danish logistics conglomerate Maersk, you might recognize the name from the sides of shipping containers you see on the highway. Maersk said today it expects demand for said containers to decline between 2 and 4% this year, which could mean there's less demand for the stuff in those containers, right? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more.
By one estimate, about 90% of global trade is carried over water. And the goods that we're trading?
It's furniture, it's clothes, it's electronics.
Ken Hexter is a research analyst covering transportation at Bank of America. He says those goods go on ships about 6 to 9 months before they reach retailers. So when a shipper like Maersk says there will be less demand?
It is a direct insight, right, on what's going to hit our shores.
Or not hit them, which Maersk says could be a sign of weakening consumer spending and a possible recession. But also that we got a lot of stuff in already while sales were strong. Chris Weatherby is a transportation analyst at Citi.
So shippers generally went a little bit higher with their inventory levels because they didn't want to miss sales. And that has a hangover as we move into a sort of slower demand environment.
So many warehouses are still packed with inventory, says Phil Levy. He's chief economist at Flexport, a logistics platform that works with most of the major shippers.
In reality, we have enough stuff brought into the country already that you could maintain pretty high levels of consumption and see much more dramatic cuts in shipping than that.
Levy also points out that these shippers ordered a lot of actual new ships when demand was high. They'll be coming online over the next 2 years. That means there will be even more space available for containers, and it's hard to know if consumers will have the money or the desire to fill that space up. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Coming up.
What does recession mean when you're in a daily struggle?
It's a good question, right? First, though, Let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials, down 505 today, 1.5%, 32,147. Sorry for the pause there. We just haven't heard the wah-wahs in a while. NASDAQ down 366, 3.3%, 10,524. S&P 500 down 96 points, 2.5%, 37.59. Heard from Sabri about people heading back into the labor market or finding jobs in hospitality and leisure industries that are hiring these days to keep up with demand. So, some hospitality and leisure stocks. Why don't we? Marriott down 4.4% today. Cheesecake Factory, that ticker, by the way, C-A-K-E, cake, I didn't know that, sank almost 5.2%. Carnival Corporation slowed almost 4% today. CVS and Walgreens have agreed to pay more than $10 billion in a settlement to resolve lawsuits from city, states, and Native American tribes stemming from the opioid crisis. CVS up 2.3% today. Walgreens Boots Alliance slipped about 1.2%. Rite Aid, which settled earlier this year, down 5.1% today. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 4.09%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. The Fed, as Chair Powell likes to tell us, looks at the data as they try to figure out what is what in this economy. I spent a couple of days in Buffalo, New York a couple of weeks ago with one of our Friday regulars, ADP's chief economist, Neela Richardson, doing exactly that, talking about all the data she's got at her fingertips, but then going out and finding out what that data looks like in real life as we tell the story of this peculiar economic moment from one particular place. Buffalo is a place where wages for low-paid workers have increased a lot. But at the same time, as you know, prices are going up too. A lot. And one of the most stubbornly high categories of inflation right now is food. The cost of food at home, groceries, in other words, was up 13% in September from a year ago. So early on a cold and rainy morning, Neela and I made our way to a parking lot in East Buffalo. There are more than 7,000 residential vacant lots around here, and it's home to something like 80% of the city's black residents. We were outside an affordable housing development called Westminster Commons, designed for seniors making less than 60% of the area's median income.
Is that your truck?
We watched as a purple truck pulled into the lot and a couple of people got out.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I'm Kai, by the way.
H.
Nice to see you, H. How are you?
Good, good.
Can we just chit-chat while you're working here?
Absolutely.
They're here to sell fresh produce.
Most of the stuff that we have is, like, really good sellers, like the grapes, the apples, the sweet potatoes, the onions, the carrots, you know, stuff like that.
And this stuff is not expensive. This looks pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Pears, 50 cents a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Grapes, $3 a box.
Mm-hmm.
Nice bag of apples for $2.
That's right.
That's pretty good.
Can I ask, how often do things change? Like, do you get different vegetables?
Is it like seasonal stuff?
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
H and his assistant Molly work for an organization called Feed More Western New York. It runs food banks and pantries, other programs across the region. The truck is part of a relatively new program.
We are a truck that actually pays with cash, credit, SNAP.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of options for them to actually buy this produce.
How far do you think the nearest grocery store is from here? You probably don't know off the top of your head, do you?
From, like, for example, Tops.
Well, yeah, Tops.
Yeah, one on Jefferson, I would say, driving like 10 minutes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
But walking?
Yeah, forget it.
Forget
carrying
it.
Bags and all that.
Right.
That Tops he's talking about is the one where a gunman from out of town killed 10 people, injured 3 others back in May. It's about a 29-minute walk from where we're standing. When this truck is here, though, once a week, people can shop for produce literally just steps from their front doors.
If you want to shop, you're welcome to
come. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll get out of your way.
Can I have to see your bag, please?
Yeah. Can we talk for a minute? Tell me your name.
My name is Carl.
Carl, tell me what you're doing here.
I'm buying vegetables and fruits.
If this wasn't here, where would you go?
Oh, I would go to Dash.
How hard is it for you to get to Dash?
I take 2 buses. I don't have a car.
So you take 2 buses. How long does that take you?
That will take me around 40 minutes one way.
So you can walk out your front door and
yeah.
Come and get fresh fruits and vegetables here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Very convenient.
That convenience is intentional. The Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers, which provides supportive housing and other programs in the area, worked with Feed More Western New York to bring this truck here.
Originally, this was set up to service individuals that reside at our group homes and our affordable housing complexes and things of that nature. But we also know that everybody in the community should be accessing fresh fruits and vegetables. And so this brings a more affordable option to them in their neighborhood.
Chandra Redfern is the CEO.
Hi, I'm Neela. I was wondering, you provide a lot of needs, not just healthy food, but financing and I'm sure some social services as well.
Yes.
Have you seen the needs that you are caring for change after the pandemic, or is it the same needs now than it was 3 years ago?
I would say they're the same. They just increased. And the people that need the services have changed. So typically, you might see individuals that maybe had a lower socioeconomic status, or maybe they were on some type of assistance. But what we're seeing a lot of now is working individuals that just can't
make it,
and they can't make the dollar stretch.
Because even though their wages may have gone up, the prices have gone up more. And so they're trying to keep pace with where they were last year.
Right, and they can't buy, and you don't get as much.
Right.
So you're paying more, you're going to the store, but you're coming out with fewer bags.
Right.
So then that also creates a challenge when you're trying to feed your family.
Exactly.
We talked to one more shopper before we left.
All right, gentlemen.
Before you hurry off, you got a minute?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Would you mind telling me your name?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. If this farmer's market wasn't here, if this truck didn't come, how would you get fresh fruit and produce?
I have to wait until I go to the grocery store.
Yeah. But it's tough to do, right? Because you got a walker, you have to carry bags.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a shopping cart. And then I have to worry about how I'm getting all this stuff upstairs.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when I go grocery shopping, I tend to buy a lot.
Well, it's smarter to, you know, get a lot on one trip, right?
Yeah, because I have to shop once a month.
Once a month?
Once a month.
Wow. Why once a month?
Because that's when I get my food stamps.
How else do you get by? You get other help?
Food stamps in my Social Security.
Yeah. So what does it mean to you that prices have been going up so much?
It means that I have to get less food. I have to shop wisely and buy in bulk.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
So at what point, if you shop once a month, and it's probably at the beginning of the month, I'm going to guess.
Yes.
Is there a time towards the end of the month where it's a little, where you're stretching a little bit more to make it till the next?
Well, that's why I buy in bulk. You know, I'll buy 3-4 loaves of bread, put some in the freezer, and when it's time to take some out, I have some to take out.
Right. You have to do a lot of planning. That's the bottom line. You have to really think it through. You can't just, like, go grab some stuff.
You know, because, I mean, I have very good eating habits, so I plan very carefully with my food stamps so I can have the things that I like to eat.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too.
You too. I am curious how you're going to cook that squash, but I won't make you.
Oh, I'm going to cut it, put some butter in it, and some brown sugar.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's really good.
That's how my mom used to do
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
Good hot meal for a day like today.
Thank
you. Have a wonderful rest of your
day. Have a blessed day. Take care.
Neela and I had one more conversation while we were in Buffalo.
Mic check, mic check, mic check. My shoes are still wet from this morning.
I'll just count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Over
nine,
on
10.
Elmwood Avenue, where we started our coverage on Monday, we sat down in the corner of a restaurant. It was a taste of soul, actually.
So here we are. We've been reporting in Buffalo for a couple of days. And when we talked at the coffee shop, you talked about hope. Tell me what you've seen that gives you hope about Buffalo.
I think the bicycle owner said it best, Ethan.
Yeah.
It's looking for those hills and not being afraid of them. Getting over the hills. They're doing it. You hear about confidence and optimism all the time. You hear about it in the stock market. You hear about it in the economy. You hear about it in whether inflation has peaked or not. Hope is different. Hope is like, no, I see the obstacles. I know that these obstacles can overcome me, but I have hope that I can get over them. And that's what I see in Buffalo.
About that hope, though, the challenge, of course, is for the lowest of the low-income people that we were talking about in the coffee shop the other day, they got to get food on the table every single day. They got to get by on wages that, while up a lot, are still relatively low. You talked a lot about, you know, coming from a city just like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you went back to your hometown today, what do you think you would see? Would you see the same set of problems?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, if I go to a lot of small towns, you'd see the same issue. And the thing is, we get to see it. Think of all the policymakers, the economists sitting in New York and D.C. who don't see it. And I think there's a detachment between the numbers and the data, and the people who those numbers represent.
All right, so look, how do we make that connection, right? Because that's literally my job, is to tell the stories of the people in places like Buffalo so that people who are in positions of power can make decisions that affect people's lives. How do we do that?
Well, I think talking to people is a great start. I've learned so much in the last 2 days. I've learned about innovation. The business owners that we talked to, two of them, started businesses in a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, the world's on fire. Let me start a business.
Yeah, right.
What kind of person?
Gutsy move. I mean, who does that?
Who does that? Who starts a business, first of all? It's someone who knows how to deal with ambiguity. And so many of our policymakers don't. And that's what all of these people exemplify. From the people who are on fixed incomes, they start the month with a set amount of money.
Right.
And they make sure that money lasts the entire 30 to 31 days.
Right, right.
And they're innovative about it. They use what they have to get to where they need to go. And I think that's something that's missing in a national discourse about our big problems.
You know what word I didn't hear at all the last couple of days, which we hear all the time in the national discourse, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody? Recession. I didn't hear that word at all.
What does recession mean when you're in a daily struggle? I mean, recession is something that you get to reflect on. I mean, that's not your day-to-day.
That's not what you open your restaurant or your business doors thinking about. You think about, how do you get customers in the door today? Recession is something you think about maybe if you turn on the news later that night. It's not how you guide your day.
The reason we're here is because we've been talking to you and your folks for a long time about the data you have.
Yeah.
And about what that shows you about cities and people and incomes and all of that. Granted, this is an anecdotal question. Was your data generally validated by what you saw here?
Yes. Our data is a reflection of a human experience. And this was the first time I saw the data match to a human experience. Our data showed that low-wage workers in Buffalo saw a 40% year-over-year increase. That's not the full story. There's a whole experience beyond that story. There's an experience from the shop owner's perspective that they can't get those same workers at the price that they paid them last year. There's an experience about people who can't work, you know, and what that means in terms of inflation. There's the whole housing component about being able to build a business based on your passion because it's affordable. Like, you can do that here in Buffalo. So, yeah, I would say that the data was validated, but it also showed us that there was a larger story behind that data point.
It was truly lovely to have you here. I'm so glad
Thanks.
You came.
It was a Thanks. Privilege. It was one of my lifetime career privileges to do this with you.
Thanks. Final note on the way out, tying together, loosely to be sure, the two broad themes of the program today, inflation and food. Saw this in a report from Wells Fargo about Thanksgiving this year and what it's going to cost us. Apparently, sweet potatoes are going to be a bargain. There was a bumper crop. Cranberries, not so much, so they are going to be more expensive. You could buy the canned gelatinous kind, but don't do that. Also, though, turkey, up 23% from last year. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context because, as I like to say, context matters. All right, much tension, of course, here and elsewhere today about how high and for how long the Fed is going to be raising interest rates, with the caveat that what is going on today is not, repeat, not the same as what was going on back then. In June of 1981, the Paul Volcker Fed raised the federal funds rate to 20%, 20%. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostet, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Tirado, and Becca Weinman. I should say, by the way, one more element, maybe two, actually, I forget, coming from Buffalo tomorrow. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.